Maybe you had dreams of working as a singer or painter or other artist as a kid, and maybe you even made it. But a lot of people think of arts careers as dreams, dreams only, not to be considered as real-life pathways to pursue. Our guests this hour work with artists to turn those dreams into reality. Patricia Morrison and Delaine Dew hold workshops and retreats together to help artists work toward reaching their goals. And they'll be holding one later this month, which we'll talk about in just a bit. But I want to introduce our guests first and say hello and find out a bit more about them. Patricia Morrison, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into this line of work and what you do for your own work.
Sure. Well, I started out as a teacher and an activist and a musician myself, and produced a couple of albums and toured nationally. And when I was ready to do something a little bit different, not be on the road so much, I approached someone about creating a new life for myself and seeing if there was a way to do it differently. In the musical world, there's a thought that the only way to make a living is to do 200 shows a year and be on the road constantly, and that's not very conducive to relationships and family and having a life that most people want. And so I was really looking for something different for myself, and in the course of that search and the guidance that I received, I really discovered a way for other artists and creatives to support their work and to be able to be the artist, to be the creative, and to have those dreams come to reality, but also to have the income so that they can live a grown-up life.
And Delaine Dew, you're an art therapist, so your approach is somewhat different, it sounds like.
Yes, but I had the experience of going to a private art school in Detroit, Michigan. And that was a really intense, wonderful experience that I don't regret at all. However, part of the experience of private art school is to have all of your homework and all of your classes be studio-style classes. So all of the work comes from inside, whether it's supposed to be a graphic design piece or a fine art piece. It all gets attached because it all comes from inside. And then it all always goes up on a wall in a class and gets critiqued. And the critiques aren't bad, but just that's an intense process to go through every day, multiple times a day. And I took my first art therapy class as probably like a sophomore, I think, in that experience, and knew immediately that that was the kind of art that I was meant to do. So having a chance to be able to really practice and make it ugly or not do it at all or rip it up, that became an important part of my creative process, not just for my own psychology, but also such an important part of practicing. In that practice, art that can be hung on a wall somewhere, you know, comes to the fore sometimes, but it's okay for a lot of it to be ugly and trashy. And
well, in fact, isn't that part of the point? That was to make sure that you're getting the stuff inside of you out into some representation.
Exactly,
of
art. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then there's so much more to choose from versus the perfectionist model of like, oh, this piece of art has to be the piece of art that's the good one.
There can be no bad steps on the way to good art?
No bad steps on the way to good art. Huh. Yeah. In art school, we had a saying that if you couldn't make it good, make it red. And if you couldn't make it red, make it big or something like that. So, which just kind of reinforced actually that it, you know, that the product was so important. And so discovering art therapy and becoming an art therapist really instilled and supported the practice of whatever the art form is, whatever the discipline is, but that the practice and the process are a really important part of what leads to a product.
And there is a certification for art therapy, is that right?
Right. So being an art therapist is a master's in psychology with an art therapy emphasis or a master's in art therapy. So I have that.
Right. So, wow. So you spent a fair amount of time in school.
Yes. And it's a bit like having a double major.
So it's generally then therapy for people through art, not necessarily therapy for people who make art on a regular
exactly,
basis.
Exactly. It's one of the first inhibitions that people break through in art therapy is that they're not an artist or that they can't draw, because it really doesn't matter in art therapy. It's more about what does it look like to the best of my ability? What does grief look like? Or what does, you know, my unfocused sense that I'm aware of look like? What does my inner critic look like that's telling me that, you know, if you can't make it good, make it big, and if you can't make it big, make it red? You know, what does that voice look like? So that I can work with that. And then the context of the Creativity Now work that Patricia and I do, that's a lot of what I bring is, you know, what are the barriers and the thinking errors and the emotional blocks that are in play that are keeping you from being able to birth your gifts into the world? And
that's a really interesting. It's a real interesting melding of skills then the two of you bring. You know, kind of a yin and yang sort of thing. So, Patricia, how did you guys hook up together and begin to offer these? Whoops, hook up is not the word to use in this day and age.
No, that's a great question because you're right. I mean, Delaine really brings the psychology background and the therapy background, as well as her art skills, and then I invited her into. To work with my people because I work with artists and creatives. Not all of them are professionals in their field by any stretch of the imagination, but people that really identify as creatives and that need to express that voice on a regular basis. And I said, come work with my people. You're going to love them. And she did. They think in metaphors already, she said.
Right. Thinking in metaphors and other ways to go about approaching art and a career in art, or at least making a living of art, or at least completing your art projects. All of these things are steps that Patricia Morrison and Delaine do deal with. We'll come back and talk more with them and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about art and artists and how people who had dreams of being artists may actually turn those dreams into reality. We tend to think a lot in terms of, in our society, of art being something you do off on the side. Not a lot of people can really make a living at it. Or can they? Well, today's guests help encourage artists to at least complete their tasks and begin to look at their lives in more concrete ways. Patricia Morrison is with Inner Fire, Outer Light. She is herself a singer, songwriter, musician. Delaine Dew is an art therapist. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. What exactly is Inner Fire, Outer Light, Patricia?
Well, Inner Fire, Outer Light is the name represents basically what I do with my clients to really stoke their inner fires of creativity, organization, focus, and direction so that they can shine more brightly in the world and be paid adequately for it. Really, that's an important key piece because without money, many of us can't make our work. It costs money to be a musician, a writer, an actor, a visual artist. All of those things, there are material costs, there are educational costs, there are all those kinds of costs involved. And so even if you're just trying to make your work, there needs to be money available. And if you're trying to make a living at it, obviously that's a whole nother layer. So that's the work that I do really on the practical end and helping people birth that vision in their lives. And then partnering with Delaine has been really wonderful because she helps people with all of the mental blocks that invariably come up and all of the psychological pieces that keep us from sharing our work in the world.
The term artist in America certainly tends to come with either struggling or starving or anyone
yes.
a number
crazy.
Of the,
crazy
artist.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I got
oh,
those
yeah.
too. Do you then, Patricia, dispute the premise that people have to struggle or starve or suffer or any one of those or be crazy?
One of the things that we do in our work together is really look at the stories that we've been fed and as a society, but also the stories that we held on to as children. And sometimes those stories really serve us when we're small. Like, I'm the unique individual, protects me and keeps me safe as a child because I can just say, well, they're being mean to me because they don't understand me. But as an adult, it can be very isolating. So some of these stories are things that serve us at one point in our life, but not another. Being a starving artist in your 20s seems pretty sexy, but when you're in your 40s, it starts to get old. And so so then we need to lay that story aside and really look at how can I be a thriving part of the community and have a solid, stable life of my own. And there are so many ways of doing it. And people's creativity really is their greatest asset in building that life. But sometimes we ourselves get stuck in limited ways of thinking about how it can be done.
Do you think there's too much of a dual-track thinking where people think the creativity is only for the artwork and don't apply to the other parts of their life, don't think that there can be a little more melding of the strands?
Absolutely. I think that happens a lot, especially if creatives have had more standardized jobs where they've been told or trained that their creativity is not valued. Then it's hard for them sometimes to take that and apply it to the rest of their life. But it is really a strong asset. And it's a funny world that we live in because all the business journals say, creativity, yay, raw, it's the best thing in business. But most business practices actually isolate and do not value creativity because there has to be room for failure. As Delaine was saying, you have to make crappy stuff in order to get to the good stuff. And in order to do that, there has to be space for that. And most work contexts don't really create that space. And so I think it's sometimes a leap for people to then go back and do that in the rest of their life. And that's one of the things we help people is apply the skills and talents they have.
We're talking about art and artists on the Jefferson Exchange with Patricia Morrison and Delaine Dew. And Delaine, I've seen your head nodding several times while Patricia was talking. Creativity seems to be walled off from a lot of the rest of our lives, which is a barrier you apparently need to break down a lot as an art therapist.
Yeah, the thing that was coming to mind as I was listening to Patricia is how many times I've heard clients in various settings, and I've worked in lots of different institutions and settings, private practice as well, where people say, I'm not creative. And where I've seen that idea and actually the practice of not being creative be a barrier for people in their behavior and in problem-solving skills just in their regular life, you know, regardless of if they're trying to make a painting or write a book or play a song. That aside, creativity is a healthy asset to use in life in general. And I hear a lot of times, oh, I'm not creative. And I have seen in, so one of the places that I've worked is in the Rogue Valley Youth Correctional Facility in Grants Pass, mm-hmm. and developed an art therapy program that ran for many years. And in that context, for example, a lack of creativity means a lack of options in responding to a stressor. So if your only option, because everything is black and white and there is no creativity, creative thinking, you know, that creates options, then your only option when you get mad is to hit something or somebody. That's a problem. It's a limited, you know, it's tunnel vision and it's a limited set of skills. So practicing and expanding creativity in general allows people a lot more options and flexibility and fluidity in whatever they're trying to do.
Interesting when you said that people say they're not artistic. I find that people just say, I'm not a lot. I'm not good at math. I'm not good at whatever. I mean, people wall themselves off from things fairly early in life, don't they?
Yeah, I think that's true. I'm aware of when I do that myself. And one of the things that we do at the Creativity Now retreats is, cross-training.
Cross-training, yeah.
So, you know, like in sports, cross-training is a really valuable thing. And even in workplaces, you know, where there's been cross-training programs so that somebody knows how to do more than one person's job. And so we do creative cross-training where we have to all experience different disciplines. So for me, singing and using my voice is terrifying. And for Patricia, it's her first creative language.
Drawing is not my happy
drawing
place.
It's not her happy place. So we came up with, creative cross training so that at the retreats, everybody, you know, tries it all and jumps in. And it also fosters a sense of play, which is that process part and that, as we grow or when we're little, we play and that's how we discover things a lot of times. And there's a lot of falling down before we figure out how to stand up.
So at these retreats, and I should point out there's a Creativity Now retreat coming up September 25th through 28th at Camp Latgawa in Southern Oregon. Do you have like karaoke night for the visual artists and painting night for the singers?
Well, karaoke night. Wow, there's an idea. No, I mean, we try to balance solo and group time because people do sometimes bring projects and things that they want to work on, and there's space and time for that. But there's also time together where we can explore and play and really get that beginner's mind again. Because when you're first learning something, there's some excitement about it and there's some playfulness about it. But after you've been doing it for a long time, it can seem routine. And so to get people into a playful space, sometimes we take them into another medium. And that mostly happens together, which is great because there will be a time in which you feel totally confident and comfortable. And then there'll be a time in which, but you know, other people in the room are uncomfortable and you can kind of help them feel better. And then there'll be a time in which you feel a little uncomfortable and other people are helping guide that. So people can really serve and support each other in that process.
Patricia Morrison and Delaine Du, our guests again on the Jefferson Exchange, talking about completing artwork, following your dreams in arts. Maybe it'll lead to a career. At least you can finish your projects, which is what they encourage people to do through what they're doing with Creativity Now retreats and others. Join us on the Exchange with questions or comments. Maybe you've had some experiences as an artist yourself or have decided not to pursue a career in art because of all the usual reasons listed. Can't make money at it, takes too much time, can't get to it, whatever. 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Patricia, does this represents a fairly fundamental shift, though, for a lot of artists, doesn't it? I mean, you were talking about the unchained, like, I need to be able to express my creativity level of things. And then what you're talking about doing through your regular work and through these retreats is flipping the switch and requiring them to think more like managers, more like taskmasters in the sense of at least getting a task finished, financial managers, any one of those things where they're thinking in terms of the business end or at least the task completion end of things, which is a bit of a leap for some artists, isn't it?
Well, we often think that the creative process is this one moment of insight, you know, that moment of zing when you get a new idea. But that's really only part of the process. Anybody that has completed a project knows that the next part of the process, you know, is the pouring it out. And then there's the editing. And then there's the refining. And then there's the complete, you know, there are all these different stages. And they all have their own kind of creativity along with them. So having a plan and following it to completion doesn't make you less creative, but it's recognizing that it's part of the whole. You know, that zingy feeling is great, but if you never end up with anything you can show anyone, then the motivation quickly fades. And so there's something even better than that initial zing, which is the finished project and being able to share that with the world, or the successful creative business that is really sharing your gifts with the world. There's something lasting about that. It's like mastering a musical instrument. There is so much greater happiness that comes from persevering through some difficult tasks and getting to a level of mastery than just the initial fun play part. And so both of those are really important and necessary parts of the process.
It is work, ultimately. I mean, art is not going to be all fun all the time, right?
That's right. I have a bumper sticker that says artwork is work. And it's important for artists and creatives to realize that, but I think it's also important for the greater population. I don't know how many musicians and writers and artists get asked to do their work for free all the time. And people don't realize the decades of education, dedication, and investment that they've put into their work. And no one would say to an accountant, well, you should just file my taxes for me for free. But that happens to artists and creatives all the time. And so it's a process that's really important that people come to value their own work first. And then we can start to educate society about the fact that it is work and that it's valuable work. And yes, we're passionate about it, but that doesn't make it any less challenging.
The concept of free and value is an interesting one, though, because, I mean, how do artists determine their work? Is it as simple as, well, I spent 20 hours doing this, and at $10 an hour, this should be at $200 or something like that? I mean...
No.
No. 10 was a little low, I guess. but the concept, I guess, I'm trying to get to is how do you place a value on something that may be priceless to the person who created it?
Yeah, so there's obviously the value of creating the work for oneself. And that's the thing that most people think about when they try to value work. Like, oh, well, this was fun for you, so you've already received the value for it. But then there's also the value that the work imparts. And that's the thing that's a little bit more challenging to measure. That is the value of transformation or inspiration or healing that the creative work can help impart to the participant, the audience, the person taking it in. And so that's the thing that we try to look at when we're actually trying to put a price tag on things, is not what value does it have to me, because that's inherent and wonderful and lovely, but that doesn't have anything to do with the price. It's what is the value does it have to the person who's taking it in? And you're right, it's a bit subjective, but really it's determining, you know, what are the needs of the artist and what is the value to the consumer, so to speak.
Delaine, I want to come back to you because you work with a lot of non-artists, right?
Right.
And so what are some of the situations you described already, the work at the Oregon Youth Authority Center in Grants Pass with the juvenile offenders? What are some of the other circumstances in which people will seek out you for art therapy?
Well, I have private practice, so I see people individually. And in my private practice, my specialties are trauma and anxiety. And I also work with a lot of people who are part of the queer community, who may not be, their sexuality or gender identity may or may not be what is the question or what is the issue at the moment. So that part is a
is
little bit aside.
Is the term queer community meant to be a broad applier?
Broad applier to that. But I do work with people in transition who are transgender as well. So people seeking me out for individual therapy, it's usually some form of trauma or anxiety, regardless of whether they're straight or queer. And then as far as organizations and agencies where I work, I reopened my practice in January after a hiatus because of the recession. And so it's a new era for people's art. And I've been working a lot with the elder community. So I'm started doing a group for elders with a little bit of cognitive impairment and a respite program at the Rogue Valley Manor. Did a summer program for elders at the Ashland Art Center. And just received a grant to do a cancer support group at Providence Hospital. And then I have my own community-based group that starts in October that's an art therapy and authentic movement group for adults that's kind of an open studio. So same thing like private practice people just kind of self-select and go through an application process and are in that group that runs for 10 weeks. And then I have an online program as well, so people can be in an art therapy group online and do their work wherever they are.
How does that work? Do they send you images of what they're working on?
Yeah, so everybody in the group gets a prompt every day about an image and a way to process with the image and some journaling, and then they can post their process, their image, you know, whatever they'd like to post in a confidential group that's online, and then I can interact with the people in the group and the images and change what the prompts are that are coming up based on what's coming up in the group. It's very fun.
Delaine Dew and Patricia Morrison are guests again on the Jefferson Exchange. Let's take a look at, because the work you do together is about encouraging people to follow through on their artwork. And there's a great list on this graphic that you drew, Delaine. And it's a list of things to do before I create. Tell us a bit about the creation of this list. And is it one you've lived many times yourself?
I think so. It must. It must be. I have experienced all of those things. I certainly, it was a collaboration coming from Patricia's work with people and all of the practical pieces mm-hmm. that she brings to it. So she's heard all of these things many, many, many times.
From not only our experience, but the experience of many clients over the years. So
right. So, perfectionism, the piece in there about, you know, well, I tried to paint, but it wasn't the Mona Lisa, and I tried to play the piano, but it wasn't Mozart, and I tried to write a book, but it wasn't Mark Twain, you know, so the perfectionism mm-hmm. that we lay on ourselves and that we get from society about, you know, this has to be, you know, the best novel ever, or
so
it's not worth doing.
Right. Somebody else critiquing it beyond that. It's your own self saying, this is not good enough.
Right, right.
Yeah. Many people never let their work actually get to an outside critique. Their inside critique is so strong.
Huh. And do you think that's because they are anticipating what society will say? I mean, I'm trying to figure out where that comes from. I mean, because there are some people who are just like, hey, isn't this great? And you look at it and go,
Not everyone has the strong internal critique, but a lot of the people that we work with do. And some of it's societal. A lot of it comes from family, or there's always that one influential adult that somebody had in their life that might have been a teacher. It might have been a family member or a neighbor. And it happens in music a lot. It's that person that said, just mouth the words. And for the rest,
don't really sing.
Yeah, for the rest of their lives, they literally stop singing when they're 7 years old and never do it again, and that's so tragic.
Wow. Okay, we'll talk more about how to inspire artists to follow through and follow their dreams, which as your work points out, they're not just fluffy things. They're things you should really be pursuing. We'll talk more with Patricia Morrison and Delaine Dew when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with your phone calls and emails in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange. It's our final segment of the day here. You can join us here as we talk to Patricia Morrison and Delaine Dew about art and creativity and how to encourage those in people. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Patricia and Delaine offer retreats, including one called Creativity Now. They'll be offering in late September at Camp Latgawa in Southern Oregon. But we were just talking about the many obstacles that people put up in front of themselves for completing artwork, which is a lot of what these retreats are about. And we were just talking about the self-criticism part of it, but then it's also just mundane things. Based on the list you're showing here.
Right. I think the one in the infographic that I currently relate to the most, well, the two. One is having so many ideas, and I've started all of them, and I haven't finished any of them. So, and being broadly creative, that can be even worse, because I have my professional creative category, but then I have all of my hobbies, and then sometimes that dovetails into the list that you were commenting on, the things to do before I create, which I fall into a lot. And some of my, hobbies run into my profession. So it's harvest season, and part of my creativity is through cooking. So I've been canning, and people, giving me tons and tons of tomatoes, and, what new recipes and what can I create in the kitchen has, takes up a lot of time. So that's run into some of my, but I really should be in my studio working on this other thing that is not a hobby, that is my profession. So that's one that I personally deal with, every day is, which creative thing am I going to work on, and which one supports me in earning a living, and which one is a fun hobby. And that list does get big. It starts out with laundry, which is a famous way to procrastinate, and gets big and a bit grandiose. Before I can, record my album with my violin, I have to learn how to make my own violin by hand. Then I have to help the children get all the way through graduation. Once they've graduated and I've, completed that test, then I can go into my studio and play. And then, achieve world peace. That's really important. I should really work on that first. And then I can attend to my own creativity.
And why do you suppose people do put those kinds of obstacles up? I mean, it's stuff they love to do, but they're always finding things they want to do somewhat less getting in the way.
Well, I think part of this is the value issue, because we are told and we believe in some part of ourselves that what is coming through us or from us is inherently less valuable than taking care of other people. This is often true for women, but sometimes men as well, that the work for others, they can always do and they can always complete. But when it feels like it's work for themselves, that's when they run into trouble. So I help people prioritize and focus. But one of the main things is really just realizing that your work isn't just for you. I mean, there are creative hobbies and outlets that are just for you, and allowing those to be hobbies and not put pressure to finish them is great. And then the things that are really going to make an impact in the lives of other people, those, once people can kind of realize that their work has a life beyond them and that it can do good in the world, that can be a great turning point for people to really focus and spend the time and energy and investment that they need to bring it to life.
Is it as simple as teaching things like some time management skills too? Like, okay, pick the 20 minutes you're going to put the laundry in and change out from the washer to the dryer and then move back to your artwork, that sort of thing?
Yeah, some of it is creating good habits and time management. Calendars, program planning, things like that. And some of it is the mindset piece. And that's why Delaine and I work together, is that there are inner and outer parts of this that really complement one another.
We're talking about a real leap for some people, though. I mean, some of these obstacles are real. I mean, if somebody's working 8, 10, 12 hours a day, the time, and has a family and responsibilities at home, the time that they have available for things like art are seriously limited.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you're dealing with at least a few people here thinking, well, if I didn't have a day job, I could really pursue this. And so this is a real leap for a lot of people. Do you counsel some of them through this?
Absolutely. And one of the things that's so great is to realize that some of the most productive artists in history have had day jobs. Day jobs actually provide stability, income, and a lot of good schedule. So for some people, that's the best thing to hold on to. And it doesn't take, we often think that I need 4 hours to really create, but sometimes you just need 15 minutes. And so that a lot can happen with, there's a great phrase that says that we tend to overestimate the amount of that can be done over a short period of time and underestimate the amount that can be done over a long period of time. If you're spending 15 to 30 minutes a day over 20 years, you can accomplish a huge amount, a huge body of work. So for some people, that really is the case. And for other people, their day jobs are soul-sucking, and they are really preventing them from doing their work. But in order to take that leap to doing something different, they need a structure in place that they can take it confidently.
There must be a dividing line somewhere, though, because there are some people who are serious about wanting to pursue this as a way to make a living, but maybe, in fact, their work is not good enough. I mean, who makes that decision ultimately?
Well,
it's probably not something a counselor is going to say.
No, I mean, I think there are two ways to make a living as a creative, right? One is directly with the work that you create. And another is using your creative skills, which may be considerable. You know, having skills in your craft is one thing. And it takes, 10,000 hours to master the craft, right? But having creative skills that apply to other areas of life is another thing. So some of the people I work with are not really going to make a good living performing or selling their work, but they're really excellent teachers, coaches, they're chefs, guides in other ways. And so we can apply their creative skills to other avenues that are more fun and fulfilling than the work that they're doing now, and really put their skills to use, and so that they can continue to improve at their craft. And that's a better fit for them. So you're right. Not everybody is going to sell their work and make a living, but there are other ways.
Patricia Morrison and Delaine Du, again, our guests on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about art and creativity and pursuing dreams here on the Jefferson Exchange. And in fact, there's a great quote on your website. What is this again? Your dreams should, your dreams are not fluffy and optional.
Yeah. Well, there's that wonderful Langston Hughes poem about a dream deferred is a dream denied. And I mean, he's, of course, referring to the dream of freedom there. But I think that that concept of freedom is what so many creatives actually long for. And if you defer a dream too long, there is such a thing as sort of dying with the music inside you. There are people who've squashed their own self-expression and their own gifts for so long that they lost track of them. And that's really tragic, because I think we all have gifts to share with the world, and we only have this one short life. So it's a limited time to actually birth them.
Delaine, talk about it. Go ahead.
I was going to say that the people who come to the Creativity Now retreat are not all people who are interested in making a living from their creative craft. So some people come because they need a retreat and life has been harsh. They're tired and they need to be around other creatives and spend a nice long weekend in the woods being catered to and nurtured and have a chance to sit and do their hobby, their creative hobby without being interrupted and with the support. So that's another, so teachers, therapists, people in life transition, that's another.
Parents, caretakers.
Parents, caretakers. Yeah. Those are other people who come to the Creativity Now retreat because it gives them the container and the focus, and there is no laundry to do.
That's a really good one.
There are no phone calls to answer.
All right.
There are no crises.
You offer these twice a year. I noticed that there was one earlier this year in Santa Fe.
Yes. Yeah, our spring retreat's in Santa Fe, and the fall retreat is here in Southern Oregon.
So talk about establishing a mood, if you would, Delaine, because I'm sure you get people who are in different phases of things. Some do just need a retreat, so they're probably tired and weary and a little dispirited about trying to work creatively. But you probably also have some people who are nervous and excited but just don't quite know what to do to get themselves pointed in the right direction. So is there a way of that you work into establishing a general mood that sort of gets everybody on at least a similar space?
Yeah, so we've structured the retreats so that there's time at the beginning and end of each day where everybody is all together. So it's the entire group of creatives, and we're doing some of that cross-training and some grounding and some meditation and some general workshop types of things that are about creativity in general. And then there's a flow from that into solo time or into time with individual appointment time with either myself or Patricia. Mm-hmm. So people, so there's a lot of safety, established in the beginning and some fun. And so the group cohesion starts right away because we begin and end each day as a group. And then there's that time to separate and, a lot of solo time to determine, so if there's three writers in the group that time, those three writers might choose to take some of that solo time and meet together. Mm-hmm. And do some work together. Or like I said, we've had people who just make an individual art therapy appointment with me, if they're there more for a retreat or if something came up for them in one of the general workshops that really hit them on a personal level deeply and they want to be able to work through that a little bit more immediately, then they can make an appointment with me. And people who are really on that track of, I really want to make a living with my art and I really need to, start this business or take it to the next level, can set up a strategy session with Patricia.
Yeah, or if they are coming and they do have that list of 27 projects and they don't know where to begin, they can set up an appointment with me as well to just get that clarity and focus so that they can really spend the days together in a more calm space and productive space.
When I think about that aspect of your work, I think about the people who help people declutter their garages and houses and stuff like that. There is a parallel, isn't there?
There is, yes. It's a more inner decluttering. But yes, it's very relevant.
But we have made, we have a wonderful organizer here in Southern Oregon who's a professional organizer that we both refer to.
We
for
do.
For people, yes.
Yeah. Sometimes the outside clutter is a factor, too.
Oh, so they really did clear some of the physical clutter. Yes, I did mean the internal part, though, where you're just trying to get yourself off the dime from the 27 started projects. So it's got ultimately got to be their decision, I'm sure. But how do you help guide them toward that decision of which one to go to first?
Well, we have a couple of processes, but one of the ones that I love is just kind of helping people look at maybe the top 10 projects that come to mind and really assess what does that project do for them. What are the gains? Are they financial? Are they personal growth and development? Are they relationship based? And then they get to do some self-reflection and decide, well, what is it that I need from my creative life right now? And they choose usually about 2 to 3 projects that then are that meet their needs and a balance of projects. Because often we want one thing to just like pay our bills and make us happy and, find us somebody to marry and, everything all in one. And so sometimes that's not very realistic. But between 2 projects, usually you can find a good balance where your personal needs are being met and your practical needs as well. And so helping people discover that.
Do people come out of the retreats and the sessions fired up and ready to attack the world? I mean, sorry, I hate to use the fight metaphors again. It seems like all we have in our culture sometimes. We're fighting this disease or, you know, going to war on that cultural condition.
Yes, people do come out inspired and focused. And some people, you know, if they just need rest and renewal, they just come out with a sense of being calm and clear. But I think clarity is one of the main gains that people have. And even if they're professional creatives, just being able to step back and look at their lives and come out with a sense of where they want to head in the coming year. And then both of us have different support programs for people who want ongoing support in whatever direction. In between the retreats.
Are there some successes to report over the years of doing this? People who just were able to shove aside the parts of their lives they considered mundane and day-to-day and really did follow their dreams?
Absolutely. Well, I am proud of a number of my folks, but I have a couple of folks that I'm working with right now and one that I've worked with off and on for a couple of years. And she's a musician and a performer, and we really focused on that aspect of her life and in increasing the value of her group's work so that they didn't have to perform so many shows that was so exhausting. And that's been fantastic and fun. They just completed a European tour, and they're actually a World War II era kind of Andrew Sisters tribute act, and they were able to be there for the 70th anniversary of the Normandy invasion and sing, which was pretty incredible. And now we're working on another aspect of her creative life to create that financial stability, because performing, as successful as they've become at it, still has a level of instability with it. And so creating a practice where she coaches young women who are competing in the Miss America system, and really focusing on the internal gains and the self-confidence and the growth as performers that they can achieve. So that's been a really fun partnership. All of my clients are really partners, and everybody has to, you know, bring a lot of attention and energy to their own process, but that's one of many.
And you can live a creative life without having to be making paintings or writing songs or books or any of that stuff. All right, I want to thank you both for joining us today. Patricia Morrison and Delaine Dew host the Creativity Now retreats, including one coming up September 25th through 28th. How do people find you if they're looking for you?
We have a website, creativitynow.net. That's the easiest way.
All right, and you will find Patricia and Delaine there. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Great to have you.
Thanks
for having us.